But you and Ray have become known for your traveling.
Yes.
And I am sure you have no idea how many countries you have visited.
We've never counted it because people count it in such repulsive ways to us. Like if they were in the airport, they count that a country.
How did that get started for you?
It's a funny story. A couple of our children were pretty well grown up. Psychology Today had a list of values in an issue, and we separately filled out our values. Our first three were the same, and our bottom three were the same.
You and Ray, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And to our surprise, our first one was adventure, both of us, and our bottom one was cleanliness and obedience. So we thought, we're ready to do more adventure. So that summer, we took all our kids and went down the Grand Canyon in rafts, an 8-day raft trip. And we just adored it. I can't tell you what it was like. It was so exciting for us and for our children as well. So we came back, where should we go? And at one point, TU had what they call the Jan plan, which was January off. And we were going to have the Jan plan. So I was going to be off. We decided to go 1, 2, 3 and say the country we wanted to go to most. We both said, 1, 2, 3, India. So we went to India. I did a speaking tour there. It worked out just very well that we could do that.
Speaking on what?
Let's see, that first trip to India, what did I speak on? I did 2 speeches that I did internationally quite a bit. One was a communication speech, which I made up. I believe in games a lot, and I used to use them in teaching a lot. And this was a set of kindergarten blocks. There were 11 blocks. I would seat people back to back. Each had a table in front of him. And I would say, now, you're the leader. You tell me what to do, but I won't look. The audience could see, you know, take the big flat block and put it down end to end. Send it this way or this way. And they would see what a mess up it was. And you couldn't talk. All you could do was go and say, I don't understand. And then the person would say, take the long block and put it in. You know, you could see the annoyance and no elucidation at all. So the second time they did it, they could ask a question and get an answer, yes or no. The third time, they could have complete communication, and you could see how it made a difference in the product. Mm-hmm. And it was a really good sociological game. Mm-hmm. I started it on the junior leagues. Started on the junior league here, and then went all over the country doing it on junior leagues everywhere. Then I did it in Peru. I did it in England. Wow. I did it in lots of countries.
So you would basically kind of work and explore all in the same mm-hmm. trip. But then some of these countries, you wouldn't just visit for a day or a week. You'd have extended stays, like 25 days or
yeah,
a month.
Yeah, 30. We really stayed in a country.
So you really got to feel and understand the culture.
Yeah. I felt it greatly enriched my teaching.
Was TU paying for some of this because you were representing?
No. I first did that in England, that communications game. I did it at the University of Birmingham, and an Indian man who was studying there came up to me and said, what could I do to get you to go to my country and do it? I said, well, I'd love to. You know, I gave him my name and address. Then at the University of Manchester, the same thing happened. So I gave them each other's name. They put together a tour where they took care of all my expenses and Raymond's too. We stayed often with faculty members, which was fun. I think that was a 4-week tour.
You'd take a lot of walking tours of countries?
A lot of walking. We both love walking. We got to be really good walkers. On our first Nepalese trip, we were totally unprepared for this kind of walking. That was right after our rafting trip. We'd both been pretty athletic. But this lovely man, he was the man who was in charge of all the logistics of the trip. Not the leader of the trip. He came up to me and he said, I tell you how to walk. So he began to spend time telling me how to place my feet, how to breathe, how to get that mountain lope going, how to pace myself. And it just made all the difference. This was a 23-day. It's so crazy to take a 23-day mountain trek with never having done it. We also had the first Sherpa leader. Usually the leaders were English, but Pratembo was our leader. And the Sherpa who taught me was named Mi'kmaq Sherpa. And on our next trip, a young Sherpa said to me, "Nancy, you really walk well." And I said, "It's all due to Mi'kmaq Sherpa." He said, "Mi'kmaq Sherpa, old man?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "My uncle." And they're all related.
You say Sherpa. What's Sherpa?
A Sherpa is a tribe in Nepal, and they are the climbers. They are the leaders and the guides now for the Everest tour. They lived up high. Pratembo, who was our leader, his uncle was the leader for Hillary. We became very, very close to Pratembo. He was amazing. At the end of the trip, he had us all seated and he said, "What was wrong with this trip?" There was something wrong with it. Two of the people on the trip were really difficult. One had had a heart attack before and had gone on the trip anyway, and he had a heart attack 4 days out. It was really difficult. Two Sherpas attached to him the whole time. And the other woman was the Kraft heiress, Kraft cheese heiress, and she drank. But we all said the trip was perfect, he said. It wasn't perfect. There were no salty crackers for dinner. He was just a wonderful leader. We all admired him.
Did you stay in five-star hotels?
Five-star tents.
In other words, no-star hotels.
No-star hotels.
You actually stayed in African huts?
We've actually stayed in African huts.
You've stayed in South American treehouses?
Treehouses, not only in South America, and in Africa. We stayed in treehouses in Africa quite a bit.
How about in Egypt?
No, in Egypt, it's so dirty. That's where we learned to not stay in three-star hotels in backward countries.
Did you stay in the desert?
Yes, we had a wonderful time in the desert. There's a huge aquifer under a lot of Egypt, under the western desert. It sustains cities, and they have lovely hotels. Not five-star, but really nice, resorty hotels. But we had not hesitated to stay in anything. Some of them really grubby.
I'll bet you've stayed in some awful places.
Yes.
Simply because that's the only choice you had.
One of them was in Egypt. We had a reservation at this hotel. We drove in, and Raymond said, "I better go in and look and see what it's like." He came out and he said, "It's terrible, but there's no place else to stay." There were orange peels and cigarettes on the floor, dirt everywhere. We got our room, and it was awful. We just weren't going to undress. Someone came in from the next room. He was a Sudanese man. He was a banker heading the bank there. And he said, "You can't stay here." He had clean sheets and mattresses brought in for us. We went to dinner with him and used the bank bathroom.
Did you ever lecture about your travels?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Very regularly at Boston Avenue Methodist.
I don't suppose there is a favorite place that you visited in the world.
Well, Nepal has been very, very important to us, and we realized how very important. When Jingle died, we were just having a really hard time. People were coming over a lot, and we decided we had to get to Nepal and get things in perspective. And we called Wilderness Travel and said, "When is your next trip to Nepal?" We went to the Annapurna Sanctuary, and we told everyone we were not going to be socializing with them. We were going to walk by ourselves. We got a feeling of the size of the world.
Yeah.